All right. Thank you for coming, everybody. I'm Adam Edmonds. I'm the CEO of Allegiance. This is my colleague Al Navarez, our VP of Products. Today we're going to be talking to you a bit about what we've learned here at Allegiance. We help companies around the world understand and listen to their customers and figure out what drives their behavior. But before we start, we got to do something fun. I've got a $100 bill, and we're going to do a little experiment here. I'm going to play the ringtone on my phone. It's been my ringtone for about the last 3 years. And all you have to do is jump up to be able to really find out who wins. You got to jump up and shout out where this ringtone comes from. That's all you need to do. And based on who wins, I'm guessing I know about when you were born. All right, so Chris up here is going to be the judge. Jump up and yell where this comes from. Here we go. Zelda, right there. Okay, what year were you born? 86. Nice, you played that game. You were a little younger than I was guessing. I was going to guess that whoever got that right was probably born somewhere between 77 and about 84 or 85. So that was Legend of Zelda. That came out when I was 5 years old. I was born in 1979. And that's going to be a lot about what we discussed today. We're going to give you some models that some of the best companies in the world use to understand different generations and how to build experiences to those different generations. And I think, as you'll find out today, what has shaped us as, you know, depending on what generation you fall in, there are certain products, certain music, certain TV shows that really defined who we are as a generation and other world events. Before we really get started here, I want to understand who's in the audience. How many people here are in marketing? The majority. Now, more specifically, who's in branding? A lot. How about user experience and design? And then what about just pure web designers, web developers? Okay. So a pretty mixed group, but mainly in marketing. So I think this will be a very relevant topic for you. And I think you'll all understand this basic concept and basic premise of our entire presentation today, that it's no longer about just building the right product and the best product. It's about the entire experience around your brand and your product and expectations that some of these younger generations have, specifically Gen Y and Gen Z, as these kids grow up and start to have money of their own. What is it that your brand, your product, how do you need to position yourself in order to capture their share of wallet and their loyalty? Because they're very, very different than some of the previous generations. Before we jump into some of this, we want to start with a quick video that will give a little bit of an overview of what we're going to talk about here.
A recent Cisco study, and throw some numbers here on the board. 56% of current college students will not accept a job from a company that bans social media. 60% think they have the right to work remotely with a flexible schedule.
I like that.
And one of three students prioritize social media freedom and device flexibility over salary.
Some good marketers, I think Volkswagen is doing a terrific job. Their commercials are fun, they're funky, they show Gen Y people. I think they're doing a terrific stuff. I think Facebook is the gold standard of getting students to embrace your brand. It started on the Harvard campus and it grew through viral marketing.
Right.
And what they've done recently is allowed other people to build applications for their site. I think these closed environments are not going to cut it with generation. It's like, let me take your product and do with it what I want. I love the M&M's campaign where you can build an M&M that looks like you online. I mean, it's all about making the product look like the generation. So those are just a few, and there are a lot of other good ones out there. But ask Gen Ys what they like, and you'll get an earful.
They don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, it won't. Give it a second. It's going to space. Can you give it a second to get back from space? I was on an airplane, and there was internet, high-speed internet on the airplane. That's
yes.
The newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane, and they go, open up your laptop, you can go on the internet. And it's fast, and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down, and they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bull****. Like, how quickly the world owes him something
yes.
he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right.
All right, let's give a bit of an overview of the main generations we're going to be talking about today. You got Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. Gen X are primarily born in the late 60s and 70s. Generation Y was the 80s. And Gen Z is born after basically the internet became a standard thing. Generation X, how many Xers do we have here? Okay, a good number of X. I was watching the Magic Johnson documentary on ESPN Sunday night, and they mentioned that when Magic Johnson announced he was HIV positive, that was the Kennedy assassination type event for Generation X. So I don't know if it had that type of effect on you, where you remember where you were, you remember exactly when he made that announcement. Gen Y, they were primarily born in the 80s. They were raised by the late baby boomers. I was born in 79. I actually relate a lot more with Generation Y than I do to Generation X. Then Gen Z, like I said, born mainly in the later 90s and into the 2000s. I think we should call these guys the SpongeBob generation, because it says they're being raised by Generation X, but they're actually being raised by SpongeBob. Some overview. Okay, Gen X, there's about 50 million of them. They're primarily between the ages of 30 to the early 40s. 60% of these people went to college. Some of the Gen X icons, Lance Armstrong, Tiger Woods, and from the tech world, Jerry Yang, Jeff Bezos, and Michael Dell are all Gen Xers. Some of their traits and some of the brands that they relate to. These are individualistic people. They're very technical. They're the first generation that grew up. Most of them had computers at least earlier into their teenage ages. They're flexible. They're interested in work-life balance. They're creative. Again, a lot of you here, I think, relate to probably many of these traits here. Very independent thinkers. And a lot of that was attributed to their parents indulged themselves into the 60s and then raised Generation X after that. Okay, Generation Y. They're used to emerging digital technologies. They grew up on email and text messaging. These are optimistic, tech-savvy, style-conscious. They're fairly loyal to different brands. And what we were just hearing in that video clip, they're now entering the workforce, and they expect to be able to bring their own device to work. They expect to be able to use social networks and instant messaging. They've never really understood life without those things, and so adjusting to a professional experience without those is going to prove to be difficult. The interesting comment there at the bottom is Generation Y has been described as a post-emotional generation. They have no anger, no edge, no ego. And I was reading an article saying that probably the reason for that is they grew up post the civil rights movement. They grew up without really many wars that they were really exposed to. And so it's a pretty even keel generation. Some of their traits and brands that they relate to. These people are pretty selective about who they listen to, not as interested in TV as some of the other generations. They need to stumble upon your message. Traditional marketing is far less effective. So think just pouring thousands and millions of dollars into TV advertising and other traditional forms of media that worked with Generation X does not work with Y. They're cost conscious and value seekers. Okay, Gen Z, the most difficult to understand. Most of these kids do not have money yet, but they will start to have money in the very, very near future, and brands need to be ready for them. They're avid multitaskers. They demand interactivity in their devices. They expect things now. They've never really understood life without the internet. In fact, I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. They don't really even understand what the internet is. They just expect that everything is connected to everything. And this is an interesting statistic there at the bottom. This was last year. 31% of kids between the ages of 6 and 12, what they most wanted for Christmas was an iPad. This is a very interesting generation. I was another little story that I've noticed with my children, again, 5 and 9, they, to this day, do not understand the concept of live television. I've got my older one to understand live sporting events. He'll ask me when something's on, is this on right now? Is this happening right now? And with sports, I can say, yeah, this is happening right now. So he gets that. But, you know, a previously recorded sitcom or something that's on TV and we're watching it live, he doesn't get that. He doesn't understand why we can't fast forward it through the commercials. So I think that's a very defining trait of these kids. They live off of Netflix, DVR, TiVo, Al's going to cover a little bit later, some of the inventions that have come along throughout the last 30 years that we think have helped shape expectations of these different generations. Some of their traits, they're collectors, which makes, you know, companies like Pinterest that much more relevant. They're not brand loyal at all. They're very social, very collaborative. They expect that their friends will be connected for life, and they're self-publishers. They like to promote their work. Now, important traits of both Gen Y and Gen Z. They care deeply about social causes. They both are pretty high maintenance when it comes to immediacy and being able to get things quickly. You know, when was the last time you would expect a Gen Y or Gen Zer to go look up an encyclopedia at a library? It's just a very foreign concept to them. They're connected. They're very curious. My 9-year-old could sit on YouTube and Khan Academy all day long and watch stupid videos about volcanoes and plants and anything. They're very, very curious. And again, they're very interactive. Let's talk about some brands now that you know, have had varying success of being able to make the transition from Gen X to Gen Y to Gen Z. And for some of them, I think it's still undecided on if they'll be able to make the transition. The top one there, Kodak and Polaroid. Gen X lived off of that. Gen Y is where they lost their way. Gen Z, my kids won't even know who Polaroid was when 20 years ago that you used the name of the company to describe the product. AOL successfully marketed themselves to Gen X. We're not able to keep up. Gen Y and Gen Z, my kids, again, they won't know what America Online was. McDonald's is probably the best at this. They've stayed relevant throughout all of these different generations. Apple, what's interesting is Gen X, they didn't sell very well to Gen X. That would be an interesting study right there. But Gen Y and Gen Z obviously know who Apple is, and Disney's kind of in the same boat. Disney was a little bit absent in the 70s and 80s quite a bit. They weren't putting out many movies. A lot of kids that grew up then didn't grow up with Disney. But now that's definitely not the case. They've been able to make the transformation to Gen Y and Z very well. And then those bottom four, Levi's, Jeep, Nintendo, JetBlue, those are companies that have successfully sold to both. But it'll be interesting to see if they're able to make the adjustment to Gen Z as they start to get a little bit older and have money to experience those types of brands, buying their own, you know, clothing, cars, and doing, you know, traveling. Nevertheless, we, like I said, work with companies around the world that have figured this out. We'll give you some case studies today from clients that we work with, like JetBlue, Apple, and show you some of the best practices, some of the reporting tools, some of the methodologies and models that they use to understand their customers, understand what drives their behavior. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Al Navarez.
Thank you, Adam. Al Navarez, I'm a product manager. I've been in the field of helping companies listen to customers for almost 7 years now, and in that time I've helped some of the most admired brands in the world, like Nike, Hilton, eBay, Apple. Yes, Apple listens to their customers. More recently, we just launched Cloudera, a hugely fast-growing company that's banking on big data, and probably my most favorite customer till date is JetBlue, who we just started last month. We help them monitor post-flight, how did the flight go, and all the operations related to that. I'm going to talk about how they do that. In terms of one of my favorite products, had a daughter recently, and this thing is just amazing. You know, I wound up going to the photographer, spending a few $100s for a photo session. I said, you know, I've got to learn how to do this. And I bought one of these, and it's full of features, but it addresses my needs on so many levels. You know, I'm going to talk about why that's a little bit important. I'm going to cover a new model for customer experience, which I think as marketers you'll find very helpful in bringing holistic view to your engineering team, your organization, about what customers need. And I'll talk a little bit about the inventions over the past 30 years and how they address some of these traits that Adam talked about. And then I'll wrap up with 9 or 10 things that I've seen Apple and eBay and so forth do to make sure they're on top of this. Has anybody heard of the Kano model here for feature design? So Kano, Japanese consultant who came up with this model, which basically puts features or attributes, he calls them, into three areas. The basic are those where, and on the axis here I've got, you know, across to the right is a degree of achievement or engineering effort, investment, that kind of thing that a company can make. And basic are those things where it gets to a point where you adding more investment to this feature is not going to improve customer satisfaction, as you see on the Y scale. Think about your seatbelts in your car. The light on your airplane for reading. You know, there's not much more they can really invest that would bump up your satisfaction in a coach class seat, of course. And then there's the performance attributes. These are things that features that you will actually compare brand to brand on. Right, so the legroom, the size of the engine, the size of the interior, the design of the car. The more the company invests in these areas, the higher, ostensibly, customer satisfaction will be. And then there's the delighters, where investing in these, you're going to blow the customer away. So think about, keep those three things in mind. This is a helpful model for thinking about features. Let me jump over here. Let me talk about Tom and Sally next. So Tom fancies Sally, right? And turns out Sally's been thinking about Tom too. He's nervous. He wants to ask her on a date. Movie sounds too much for the first date. So he asks her, let's go to have some coffee. And she agrees. And what does Tom proceed to do? He picks her up, and they go to 7-Eleven. They get a cup of coffee, and they drink it on the curb. And Sally's devastated. You know, obviously why. Now, if you think about what Tom did, I suggest that he does what most companies do to us every day. He went and got coffee. There was several flavors available. There's a cup to prevent it from spilling. It keeps you warm. You know, somebody designed that experience. These are all features. Somebody had to battle and invest and so forth. So he hit everything on the feature level perfectly. They wanted to have coffee. But she was looking for something higher than that. She had some other goals. She wanted to have a low-stress date, something she can bail out of if things were going wrong, or potentially meet her future husband, for example. And he just didn't catch that. Let me go back to Maslow here. Everyone's familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I started my career working at Ford Motor Company in marketing and engineering. And a few years back, some friends from Ford started a new design firm in San Francisco called Jump Associates. I recommend looking at their site for great literature on customer experience. And they took Maslow's model and they boiled it down into a similar hierarchy that was very specific for product development. I've actually simplified their model to put it into three levels, and starts out with needs, different levels of needs. Feature need is something that you have to have because you're just doing it, right? You're having a cup of coffee, you need a cup, you need coffee. It's got to be hot. This projector hopefully keeps on working. It just has to be there. It's a result of the direct action I'm doing. Activity need is kind of a little higher level. What was your goal? To go on this low-stress date, to go present at South by Southwest, to go visit a client, often related to your job goals, but also just for fun and meeting friends and so forth. And then life needs are kind of needs that more of us have in common. You can see the specificity, right? The needs are down at the bottom. It's people using a specific product. Life needs are more general, right? The need to find true love, the need to feel safe, to feel comfortable, to have an experience, things that the Gen Y and Gen Z folks need. Now, these are helpful to think about for a number of important reasons. Companies that focus at the feature need level have a risk, because if somebody redesigns the coffee experience and you don't need coffee anymore, think about Red Bull. There's no more styrofoam cup. It's a can. If they're not focusing on why people are buying coffee, you can become extinct. You can be replaced. Innovation can outdo your product and so forth. So it's important to think about the higher level needs all the time. So I always liked both of these models, this one and the Kano model, but I thought both were missing something about thinking more holistically about what customers expect. And I think really all they were missing was each other. So I propose a new model. And I basically just merged the two together. And this has been really helpful as a product manager. And I think you'll find it, your companies will find it very helpful if you bring it back as marketers to think about the whole experience. What I've done is I took the Kano model and I laid it down across the horizontal axis. Those are the three characteristics and, you know, improving or it doesn't improve, that kind of thing, just showing visually. And on the vertical axis, I've got those needs. Now let's think back to my camera example. My Nikon, it's got way too many features, right? The features I'll never use. So they've hit the basic needs down at the bottom, the basic attributes, and also the fact that I need to take a picture, I need to store the picture, and so forth. So they're doing that well. And then they've got the lighter features, still at the feature need level. For example, when I'm zooming in, they've got this anti-vibration thing that helps me keep the zoom lens very steady. And that's kind of a nice feature because my skill can't keep it, you know, steady without the tripod. But they're also hitting the upper right quadrant. So it's a delight feature addressing a life need, right? And so there might be a basic need that even Polaroid had, right, to keep memories. But this camera is magical. I have such little skill, but the quality of the photograph will help me remember my kids in much more detail than I could ever have imagined. And secondly, I can share this. I'm a sharer. You know, I can share with my parents, perhaps, who live far away, and they can get to know my daughter like they never could have with my iPhone photograph. So they've hit these other quadrants. And here's a couple of other company examples. So Kodak possibly focused, you know, on Gen X, where they needed the photograph to take the picture. They wanted kind of something instant too. The Polaroid helped address that. But they failed to realize that, hey, Gen Z and Gen Y, these folks are connected. They're sharing. And obviously, the telephone and other inventions have kind of addressed those needs, and they've put Kodak out of business, essentially. JetBlue, our current customer, I put them in this performance area because one thing that you have to have as a feature on an airplane is a seat, but they decided to give you more leg room, right? So this might be something that you would compare airline to airline on. And it's an investment they chose to make. They've gotten out of that bottom left quadrant. That's what's important. Jeep, if for those of you who have a Jeep, Adam has a Jeep, you know, they've got all kinds of great features, and they're really basic, and there's something delightful about that. You're, you know, very austere kind of thing, but it's all there, and it just kind of makes you feel happy to have these features in there. And then probably ultimately, Apple hits that upper right quadrant. I want to point out that every company doesn't have to hit all of these squares. Some of them hit many, like maybe Nikon did. Apple perhaps focused up there versus down on the left, right? Remember when the iPhone came out, there was no cut and paste, and the phone call quality was kind of questionable. You would think phone, basic feature, have to do it. But they got lucky, and they studied their customers, and they realized, hey, if I address some life need people have to feel cool, to be connected, to have my friends in my phone through Facebook, have email right there, make it so I don't have to carry several devices. All these things address a high-level need of being comfortable, being safe, being connected, being with my friends, and so forth. And they did it in a very delightful way. So I argue that the fact that they operated in that upper right point blew away the issue they had making phone calls. Now, as designers and marketers, think about how you can use this. You know, if you're taking notes, just put the needs and attributes on your axis there. So you can put brands here, but also think about your specific product. Like here, I just made up I put points about traveling here to South by Southwest on coach class. I thought about all the things, the features that the airline provided on the bottom. You know, and JetBlue, of course, has live TV. It's addressing kind of my seat need. I didn't really need a TV for my job or for making this presentation and so forth, but it was a delighter down at that feature level. And you can think about activities. You know, I had to be there here to take to make a presentation. I had to be on time. I had to still work on my presentation. So that activity need of working on my presentation, they had Wi-Fi on board, and not all airlines have that. So that hits that square. So think about your industries and think about making a grid like this and kind of put some attributes and some needs on the axis. I think you'll find it helpful. Now, Gen Y and Gen Z also fit into this, because it's clear that things that may delight the Gen Y, either at a feature level or at a life need, may not even be a life need for Gen Z. Or they might just totally consider it a must-have, like Adam's example about things being connected, having a phone that's connected to the internet all the time. I mean, we were blown away in 2007 that we were online connected to everything. Not the case anymore. It's a must-have. When I showed this with customers, some of them suggested we even need to do this, right? They love the 9 areas to kind of model your whole customer experience. But then they said, well, all of my segments are actually different. And so you can think of a couple of layers of this even to get really complicated. So tying it back to Gen Y and Z, I know it's a little bit busy, but I promise this slide has, as Tufte calls it, a high data to ink ratio. These are all data points. So if you were born in Gen Y timeframe, kind of you can see some of the life needs that Adam referred to, and I also listed traits. And along the bottom, I've got inventions that occurred during that time. And at the very bottom, I show the age. You know, so Gen Y are 30-year-olds through about 17-year-olds today. And by the way, there's no agreed-to date on Gen Y and Gen Z. It's all kind of a little bit all over the place, depending on what you read. And also, interestingly enough, when I started studying this, I looked around the world and what they thought about Gen Y and Gen Z, and it's a very American thing. In Japan, they were confused. I was just talking to a guy from Japan out in the hallway. He didn't understand what Gen Y and Gen Z was. They had a post-war kind of generation, but they didn't have that marketing breakdown like we have. So if you were born in that time, you can probably find things that you relate to up at the top and look at the inventions that happened during that time. And what you can do for your industry, this is kind of just general software, computers, and so forth, but I suggest do it for yourself. Think of your customers' life needs and the traits they have, and think of the inventions in your industry that came around and how they might address. So, for example, Gen Y cares for the Earth, and there's the Prius in 1997, probably around the time when they became of driving age. Speed, fast service, there's SMS, and the World Wide Web, of course, for instant information. And I know everybody loves the 1 or 2 day delivery from Amazon. And then finally, going back to Tom and Sally, a need for an experience in everything we do, right? And Starbucks came out in 1988. And I can make lots more connections here. This is just kind of a sample. And let's look at Gen Z. You can see some of their traits. These are any 17-year-old or younger here. There's their life needs and their traits. And you can see some of the things that have been invented during their time. And again, I could do the exercise, connect. You know, being always connected, right? There's Wikipedia, the iPod, Facebook, of course, Twitter, the iPhone, and even Siri to some extent, where you don't even have to type anymore. You just talk into your phone. And instant gratification, I guess I attributed that to the iPod and Wikipedia, like immediately getting a song that I don't own. Remember having to go to the record store and buying a CD or a record? So it still delights. It's no reason it can't delight the Gen Y and so forth. They have some interplay. So best practices, my last part. So companies that listen well understand that customers have many reasons for being upset. The trick is focusing on every single problem is not a scalable solution. Some customers are definitely not going to recommend you. Some customers might be on the fence. Employees play an important part of that customer experience. There's some JetBlue employees at the airport. And ultimately, back to the employees, we found that when the airport operations staff helps a family, it blows them away. I mean, if you ask them about their experience after the flight, they'll give a 10. And part of it, and just in general, thinking about customer experience, the best customer experience help customers focus on what they want to do, what they care about. These guys, they want to be parents, and the airport has gotten things out of the way so they can just be parents, including escorting them to the gate. So here's some things that companies do to monitor and stay on top of this. Social media, of course. This is from 2011, so these are dated, I'm sure. But here's some of the numbers on the most popular social media. And to me, social media is like free feedback. You can search, you can find your brand, your product. You should be doing that if you're not already doing it. Last year, I published a blog post, two things you should be doing Twitter right now. And I said, you should search for yourself, you should search for your competitor. There's kind of no excuse for you not understanding what the buzz is about your competitor today. And social media monitoring, the end goal really is to listen, discover, and engage, pardon me, and engage with the customer. Excuse me. It's free feedback. And, you know, the other thing I've struggled with is that not all the Generation X, the folks that buy products like ours, are using Twitter yet. So I really encourage them, get on there, look for your product, have a conversation. I think for me what did it is the first time I asked a question on Twitter and some stranger responded with a good answer. Like, wow, strangers are helping me out here. But there's a flaw here. Think about the actionability. There's a gap with what social media can do. Think about the airport manager for JetBlue at Austin Airport. If you came to him with a report that said the flight experience from Austin today is poor, that's about the meat of what you can get with social media. You might be able to extract some other topics, but the airport operations need a lot more meat than that to understand and to act on their feedback. So the best companies, listen, post every transaction possible, whether it's post the experience, the purchase experience, the flight, checking out of the hotel, after a call center call, or even during regular use. And the best companies in the world have comprehensive programs that do this, including Apple. I helped deploy 7 global surveys for Apple a few years back. The retail store, their iPhone, they listen the heck out of their customers, despite the image they present. And they have a lot of people mining that information to ensure that they're creating the best experience for their customers. JetBlue, our current customer, after your flight, they'll sample some portion of the customer to take a survey. Surveys remain a powerful way to get more depth. You can ask quantitative questions, qualitative questions. What can we do to improve? Just think of the specificity of that and how helpful that would be to the airport manager, for example. You can combine Twitter with surveys. In a product that we have called Social Voice, for example, here I search for Walmart, and we use natural language processing to only pull out those tweets where people were experiencing Walmart. They were at Walmart. They love Walmart. People watching at Walmart. I like Myers better than Walmart. Things like that. You can pull that into our system. And then what we do is we authenticate through Walmart and say, thanks for visiting. We'd love some feedback on your recent experience, and a bit.ly URL to a survey, thereby converting her tweet, late night trips to Walmart, which is kind of, what are you going to do with that? You kind of know she shopped at Walmart. You don't know if it went well and so forth. We're going to help you convert it into structured feedback that you can now act on. I truly feel that Twitter ID will become the next email address. It's not as pervasive today as, think of all the things email does for your companies. Twitter IDs are still a little bit siloed. Only the PR department is allowed to use them. Only the marketing or whatever department is allowed to use them. I think it will become Facebook ID and so forth. They're going to become a more common medium for interacting with your customers. You can also put surveys right in line, like in Facebook, as a common approach. And here's the real reason surveys are super powerful, especially for a company like Apple or JetBlue, who organizes several groups in the company to manage the survey program. So see on the left over there, that's kind of the side. This is one survey record, let's imagine. The survey data that the customer answers, right, like are you likely to recommend, overall satisfaction, and so forth, that's actually a tiny portion of the overall survey record in a good program. Apple and so forth, they actually pile in a bunch of segment, operational, and financial data hidden to the survey taker. Right, they've gotten a feed from their CRM system, operations, other systems to augment that survey record. Now think of all the power for slicing and dicing and finding insights when you would have all this information beyond just what the customer said on their survey. That's where the power comes that social media would have a hard time doing. Great companies also use simple metrics, like the Net Promoter Score is a popular metric. It asks one question, likelihood to recommend, and it breaks it up into two areas and gets the difference, so the percentage of people that scored a 9 or 10 or 0 through 6, and you get a number. It's a calculation that can be made at the back of the napkin. And companies love it because it's simple. You can create a program in the company, in the entire Apple Corporation, entire JetBlue or Dell. They'll all buy into it because it's straightforward. There's not a lot of math, not a lot of, you know, taking the market researcher's word for it. It's super clear. Great companies also use Sesame Street simple listening tools, I call it. And for example, in our product, you know, it's very straightforward. Build a listening program, deploy it, analyze the data, and then, of course, act on it. Great companies also build helpful visualizations into the reporting application. This is something we did for JetBlue. I hung around in a JetBlue office a couple of times, and I saw maps everywhere. I'm like, okay, these folks are used to dealing with maps. Let's present their customer feedback information on a Google map. And an airport director from JFK can see color-coded customer satisfaction on all the routes to their airports, including click and so forth to get more deeper information. Text analytics is an important piece of the listening program as well. And why? Because Generation Y and Z are texting, they're social media typing, they're creating a lot of verbatims. And how do you elicit structure from verbatims? It comes from text analytics. Natural language processing and specifically is helpful because somebody might type, you know, I love your product, but your service sucks kind of thing. So if you had a lesser text analytics tool, you wouldn't know, like, where did the sucks go with? You need natural language to kind of break up the sentence and find all the topics in a paragraph. And there's great tools that do this. So it's way beyond, you know, the sentiment analysis, which many of the social media companies can do. And it's all they really can do because they don't have a lot of meat in the tweet. Great companies believe in this equation. All those backup data, the financial data and operations data, you've got to exploit analytics today. There's really no excuse for it. We really believe that analytics and the technology is going to bring great value for your company. It certainly does for JetBlue and Apple. And you need to do it with machine learning, data mining. You need to exploit the latest techniques. Here's some data. It's just a grid of pixels. Each pixel has a color. There's a pattern in there. So this is one-to-one correspondence of pixels. You need to figure out how to do this with your data to present something your whole organization gets and understands. You need to, or great companies, distribute their results. So you have got very straightforward visualizations, including that map. You've got to get these out to the corporation, including the stores. At Apple, and this is all public information now, by the way. At Apple, every day, their store managers are getting, you know, possibly hundreds of surveys and comments. And they, if you got to the back of an Apple store, you'll see them posted. Good comments, bad comments. They watch this stuff every single day to make sure that their store employees are doing the right thing for their customers. I'd recommend the book, The Ultimate Question 2.0. You'll see all kinds of great stories about how Apple is doing this today. Let's see. And I think I'm wrapping up with this one, design thinking, my favorite topic perhaps. Design thinking is a new approach. I think it was started by IDEO in Palo Alto. And it covers these kind of six or five steps. Empathize, walking in the customer's shoes, defining the high priority problems and needs customers have, coming back, brainstorming, prototyping quickly and testing it. When we started working with JetBlue before they were our customer, we promised them that we would think this way. And they saw that as very innovative because they wanted to think this way about their customers as well. And so what did we do? Something you can all do. I went to JetBlue's airports, JFK and San Francisco Airport, and I got an employee badge. And I just hung out watching airport operations. It was so much fun, and I really got into it that they actually let me check people into their luggage in at the front entrance, which was kind of interesting. And I got to interview customers or passengers. I got to interview employees and other operations people in the airport. For example, the shoe shine guy. I thought, okay, this is a guy that's kind of watching the airport all day long. And he was so insightful about what the airlines do to blow customers away. So I'd encourage you guys, you know, go walk in your employer's offices. Find that shoe shine guy. That he's kind of tangentially related to your product, but I think you'll be amazed by what they see every day. Design thinking involves going into the customer's environment and watching them in action. Now, this is a marketing picture. Yesterday, there was a good talk by RJ Owen on customer experience for the Power Glove, the Nintendo Power Glove you may have seen. And he actually lived with families watching them play video games, and it was totally unlike this, right? People are typically in a cramped space. They got to move the furniture out of the way, and they're in a basement, not in the fancy living room, that kind of thing. So if you just kind of watch marketure kind of thing, you'd think this is the experience. You want to add a product in here. It's not how it works. You've got to be there and see what's for real. Anybody see this movie, Kitchen Stories, before? I recommend it. It's a Norwegian movie about people that observe customers. These guys that drive in these trucks, they'll literally stand on top of this perch, sit on this perch in people's homes, in the kitchen, in the corner, and they watch people using the appliances of the company. And they literally write down every path and everything they do all day. How do they make the eggs and things like that? And it's a really charming, cute story. And at night, they go and sleep in their camper outside, and the next morning, they come back and watch breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Great story about, you know, doing a great job watching, you know, maybe to an extreme, watching customers. Focus groups are still very helpful. You know, they're probably not as in-depth as you being in somebody's living room, but focus groups for kids or mixed families here, for example, still reveal some great insights. This is one of my favorite tips for understanding your customer. Buy them a gift. Think about when you're most empathetic to somebody, right? And you're really thinking about blowing somebody away. You think about what they need, and a gift that will bring them a lot of joy, bring them to tears, that kind of thing. Try this for some of your customers. I think it's a really good way to exercise your listening muscle. If you bring them to tears, you've done the job. Scale. Great companies ensure that this system scales with more volume of surveys or Twitter. It's easy to set up. They can distribute the insights with good scale, and it's easy to adopt in the organization. Here's one way to scale the feedback. Finish a survey, for example, and you just indicated, I would recommend this company. So what we do is we put a tweet button on the last page. Hey, you indicated you're going to recommend us. How about actually recommending us? And you can click the button, and it goes right into Twitter, and you've actually done the recommendation. This is a good picture to think about, too, in terms of where the how this is going to scale in the future. Today, I think that most social media monitoring tools are down here. It's like answering another telephone. You've got to hire people to answer these tweets. It's a one-to-one kind of communication. I think in the future, products are going to hit these other quadrants. It's going to be more automated. Could be company managed as well, but I think customers will actually help provide some of that conversation. Great companies look at every single moment of truth to build these listening programs. And finally, to wrap up my portion here, I really think great companies consider all the needs and the attributes. And they use these tools I just went through to understand which box here is important for our customers. It could be just a couple of them or more. Could be every one of them. I think this is a helpful way to ensure that you're checking off all the boxes to think about all these needs so that you don't have that Sally and Tom incident with your customers. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Al. Just to quickly wrap up, tell you a story about a good friend of mine who looked at an industry that was not listening to customers, was not adapting, and that was the headphone industry. A good buddy, Rick Alden, avid skateboarder, and he loved all these products like skateboards and snowboards where it was an experience to buy it. It was an experience to use it. And then he felt like the headphones that went along with that, there was no experience at all involved. And I think this is a good case study of not just individual companies, but industries who don't listen to the entire customer experience and don't understand what's driving behavior with their buyers will be punished very hard and very quickly by Gen Y and Gen Z. You look at the headphone industry in just 5 years. I've seen the financial statements for Skullcandy, and in five short years, they completely obliterated that entire industry, along with probably Beats, who got the same thing about the buying behaviors within that space. So think about what your products are, what industry you're in. And if you're an entrepreneur, I often give entrepreneurs that advice. If you're looking to start a company, look to an industry or a product that's ignoring what Gen Y and Gen Z want out of that experience. And if you do that, you have a much better chance of success. If you'd like to learn more about customer experience design and management, the biggest show in the world on this happens in Las Vegas in May. It's called VOC Fusion. We're one of the company who helps put that on. Tony Hsieh will be the keynote speaker here, who again took a boring industry like shoes and made it an entirely new experience and has had a huge amount of success for that. So if you'd like to learn more about that show, it's VOC, Voice of Customer, Fusion.com. If you'd like a copy of these slides, tweet us at Allegiance Tweet, and we'll send you a link to a Dropbox folder or something that will have these slides in them. I saw a lot of people taking pictures. We can get you the full slide deck. But with that, we have a few minutes for questions, but thanks for your time today.
Hey, so great presentation, appreciate it. I'm wondering how much, from your perspective, the needs and the behaviors of Gen Y and Z influence other generations. And the moment that I thought that might be a possibility is when my mother, instead of calling Comcast, decided to tweet Comcast instead to get her problems solved, and they solved like that. So any thoughts on that?
That's an interesting... I've actually spent a lot of time talking about how these traits can be backward compatible. And one thing that has been really interesting to me is Pinterest. Pinterest is being used by 40s and 50-year-old women, not necessarily by teenagers, but it's a trait of Generation Z and Generation Y that would drive someone to want to use Pinterest. I haven't seen any research on that yet, but there's definitely many cases and examples of how those traits that Gen Z and Gen Y exhibit definitely can come back up through Generation X. I'm sure you can all remember the day when your dad started using Facebook. And, you know, it probably took 4 or 5 years, but it has been interesting to see that. I don't know, Al, if you have any specific research you've seen. But it's definitely something we see. Thanks. Yeah.
Hello. I'm a web and social media strategist at Puff. It's an online gambling company, and we are using consumer experience in our development. I saw that you mentioned that there could be brands that have full needs and attribute perspectives covered. Could you give any examples of that?
Perfect.
Yeah, with everything covered, so to say. You mentioned that there could be someone covering all the basic order attributes and needs.
Right. I'm sorry. For what industry did you say?
Online gambling company.
Gambling.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, think about in terms of the common needs or the straightforward ones, right? People want to make money for whatever reason, for financial security for themselves, for their children. So think about why people are gambling. Some people they're just driven by money. So understand who they are. There's the other people that lost their job and they need to provide for their family. If you can interview customers, you'll surface some of these high-level things that you may have been missing out on. Activity needs... I would suggest there it's just to have fun, to do something challenging. It makes me think about my mind. People like to think about the odds and so forth. So things that maybe they like to just exercise their mind in analytical ways, on the fly quickly. They just are turned on by that kind of thing. That could be an activity that you can address with various features. And then at the feature level, it's just the game itself. The players that you get, the icon that you get, the ability to share information, to keep score, that's kind of down at the feature level needs. On the fly, I can't think of more, but if you think about the model and those verbs, the feature, I have to do this, I have a goal, and my life is about this, and I want to do this, I think you'll find some interesting things.
Okay.
I was trying to point out that this is a complete model, and you can go away and kind of everybody can think about their own industry on it.
Yeah. Do you have any who isn't in gambling industry that would fulfill? I mean, I know that Sophos is doing really good thing about customer satisfaction with the product and all the life needs.
Right.
So would Sophos fit in the whole that covers all the needs and attributes?
Software?
Sophos.
Oh, Zappos. Yeah, absolutely. So they, again, remember the Gen Y characteristic to have an experience. So if you ever ordered a Zappos shoe by phone, for example, it's a different experience. You almost have a relationship with the person calling you. And I've been to the Zappos call center. If you're ever in Vegas, they actually have a policy where they'll pick you up at the airport. Zappos will, as long as you go on a tour of their office, and then they'll take you to the hotel. And you'll see that their call center agents have no time maximum. They're told stay on the phone as long as you need. So that's addressing the ability to have an experience, which is a life need for Generation Y. And I think that really does it for them. Of course, they sell the shoes. They got all the brands and so forth. It's kind of a must-have for an online e-commerce site. You expect that at Amazon has every book, has every shoe. That's a given. If somebody came around and built a better website, this is an important point. If I built a better, more interactive, more user-friendly website than Zappos, best designers in the world, lots of engineering investment, it's not going to matter. Because if I don't focus on the experience and what Zappos does well at that higher level, my better product is not going to unseat Zappos. Just like if I make better coffee, I don't like Starbucks coffee personally, but doesn't matter. They've created this entirely other experience and address people's needs on different levels. So they've created a barrier to competition that way. And I think Zappos has done that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm with Ford Motor Company.
So, oh, excellent.
Digital marketing manager. I have a question about how you see this audience maturing, because right now I have several people in X and Y who work for me. And the way I'll probably be pummeled to death after this, but they're kind of brats in adult bodies. I mean, they're used to instant gratification. I want it now. They don't care about learning about their jobs or Ford. They're learning about getting information from Ford and blogging it everywhere to make names for themselves, right?
Yeah.
So when this generation gets money, what is the best way to appease them? Do you feel it's going to be about customer service? Because you screw up once, they're going to trash your name all over Kingdom Come, right?
Yeah.
So I'm seeing it more like appeasing them post-purchase than kind of appealing to them marketing-wise, right? Or how do you see them growing up?
Right. There was a great talk 2 days ago on hiring Gen Y.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it sounds tough. They're entitled. They feel entitled.
It's so entitled. I'm sorry, you guys. You know, just seriously, sit your butts down and work. I mean, this is crazy.
All right. What they surfaced a couple of good points. If you look up their hashtag, you might find some good things if Twitter kept the. I'm going back to the Gen Y traits to help me out here. But the one thing they talked about is that Gen Y folks. Want to be, or Gen Z, or Gen Y even, they want to be involved.
Yeah.
Right? And good
but
managers...
But narcissistic, that's...
Say again?
It's very narcissistic, so I don't know the getting involved.
Yeah, they come in, you know, and you're working with folks that have been doing this business for 20 years, and they know better.
Right.
And that's really challenging. And so the good managers, this was a lady from Wells Fargo who hires tellers and other Gen Y folks, and she suggested that the best managers keep them involved in meetings. They should be part of decision making.
Right.
And definitely let them be on Facebook if they need. You know, but
when those people become a customer, how do you suggest keeping them involved? I mean, that's the hard part.
Right. So for hiring as an employee,
marketing to them. Yeah, marketing.
Yeah, targeting to them. Well, I think it's a matter of looking here. Needing an experience, again, the focusing on what Zappos did and so forth. You know, think about what their world is like typically and then blow them away. Like at the parking lot this morning, that was like the most pleasant parking lot attendant I've ever met.
Yeah.
And she had a line of cars around the corner, just total mayhem. That kind of thing, for me, gave me a good experience. It added to my South by Southwest experience. And I go away and I just told you about it, this parking lot right next to the Hilton. Live first, work second is important. So providing programs to make that life balance. Google does this in an interesting way, right? Because they've got all these technical folks who love to build and create. And so the fact they created this time where you can actually build whatever you want, they just really address this live first, work second, where the engineering team doesn't necessarily think that this is work. This is fun. This is kind of what I do. So it's one way to address. And in terms of appealing to the Gen Y consumer or Gen Z, you know, the car of tomorrow, it needs to be connected, right? There was some pictures Adam showed with the little videos on the back of the car headrest. For the Gen Y or Gen X parents, this was a total delighter, right? Kept the kids quiet in the back.
Can't live without it, right?
But kids expect it. Those of you who have kids, you've got to continue that DVD into the car so that just having that connected, hitting on all these traits, and providing just tools in the car. I think the automobile is a great example where you've got a captive customer and there's all kinds of services you can build around that as the cars become more connected. Driverless cars, I mean, who knows what that's going to do as well. Imagine the power there where you're with your friends and you can totally hang out with your friends, you know, and share with them while you're driving because no one's paying attention to the road. I mean, that's 20, 30 years out maybe, or maybe never, but that kind of thing. I mean, I just refer back to these needs, and I think you'll find some connections. Peer acceptance is important, too. So it's important for Ford to build cars where other people think they're pretty cool, too. You know, I'm going to, if you know. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think... I think so. The other important trait I put up here, friends connected for life, right? Think about their Facebook friends they're making in grammar school. Think about how many grammar school kids you still keep in touch with. Maybe some of them found you on Facebook. But these guys, imagine the network they'll have when they're grown up, when they need a doctor, when they need a new car. They've got instant people that they trusted for life, which is a whole new thing that Gen Z has that we won't, and no other generation could. We can go on forever on this. Go ahead. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, please.
Hi. The list of sort of innovations and inventions here that are within an industry,
yeah.
To what extent do marketers really need to be looking at not only our customer experiences and the customer experiences within our industry, but then also what are the game-changing experiences that our customers are having outside of our industry that we're being held accountable for and we don't even know that these are happening? And how can we think about that in a scalable way?
Yeah, a great question. We dealt with it for JetBlue, for example. As I was working in the airport, you know, you're having an experience at security. JetBlue has no influence on security, but it's affecting my customer experience. So I would say two things. Social media and Twitter, once again. You're not in the retail business, but look up Walmart. Look how people talk about Walmart. You're going to learn about another industry for free. That's powerful. That's way more powerful than the internet was before that. You're going to see real customer sentiment on what goes well, what doesn't go well for some unrelated industry. And then secondly, I would say on the analytics, which is kind of my area I like to focus on, there's, you know, insurance, retail, e-commerce, advertising, there's industries that are exploiting the heck out of analytics today. And the math is similar no matter what industry you're in. So I would say look at how they share information. How do they find insights? One of my favorite talks here at South by Southwest on Saturday was by Manchester City from England, the soccer club. And he described presenting stats about soccer teams around the world through the biggest sport in the world. There's soccer geeks who analyze every little detail, and then there's people that casually like soccer. So he had the amazing challenge of visualizing this information for everyone. And he gave a great tip for visualizing data for you all. He said, during the Super Bowl or a World Series, watch an English broadcast of this or a European broadcast, because the audience there doesn't know about football and its rules. So they take extra care and effort to make it clear. So that's another kind of fun thing I like to do, go outside of your normal area to understand how others are explaining the insights. And for us, that's what we're doing all the time. I've got to exploit analytics to find patterns to ensure that we're hitting all these life needs for our customers.
Just to add one thing to that, that's a really good question. I was at Walgreens a couple of weeks ago, and an executive at Walgreens said, the way he put it was, Apple and Zappos, they've ruined everything for us, because Gen Y and Gen Z, they don't understand that the experience you get at Walgreens isn't necessarily going to be the same as going into an Apple store, but you're expected to live up to that. So that's a common problem. If you want to go to our blog, blog.allegiance.com, we try to compile a lot of different resources around structuring your customer experience and really what the best brands in the world do. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, when we would talk to executives, they didn't really care about anything but themselves. And then a couple years later, they cared about their industry. How am I stacking up to other banks? You know, if USAA is the very, very best at customer experience in banking, that's all I care about. But that's not really as relevant anymore. And most brands we meet with today, they're asking, okay, it's no longer comparing myself to USAA. Everybody's comparing me to Apple and Zappos. And maybe it's not fair, but that's the reality of those are the dollars I'm competing for. And in Walgreens' case, they said 70% of the U.S. lives within 2 miles of a Walgreens today. So they're not going to increase revenues anymore by building stores, which has been their strategy. The only way they're going to be able to do that is by improving the customer experience, increasing share of wallet. So it's a common problem. We're on, I think, the forefront, the really nascent stages of understanding how Gen Y and Gen Z are going to adapt and how they're going to spend their money here in the next couple of decades. And we're excited to be a part of that. But great question. Is there any other questions? If not, we've got some swag up here. We got water bottles. We got books. If you have kids, I do not recommend The Flying Monkey. It's bad news. But if you don't have kids, come and grab a flying monkey. Thank you, everyone.